Welcome back, everyone, to episode 19 of ContraCast. I am, as always, Paul Kwiatkowski, and with me today are Michael Pulowski and John Kwiatkowski.
Heyo.
What is up?
Go ahead and tell everyone where they can get in touch with you.
You can get in touch with me. All the links are on the ContraCast blog, and it's contracast.blogspot.com.
Yeah, like he said. Mike, how about you?
You can get in touch with me at facebook.com/mpulowski, or you can get in contact with me at twitter.com/mikepulowski.
Yeah, I'm just going to give one today. Everywhere I am on the web has links to everywhere else, so twitter.com/contrapaul. Today we're going to do kind of a fast show. The office comes on at 9, and it's 8:12, so got a roll on this. So we have a number of topics and news. I suppose the biggest news for today is that Google unveiled or announced their Chrome OS, the Chrome operating system. This was live blogged all over the web, and today was not necessarily it was not like they are revealing it and like all of a sudden it's available to download. It's basically telling you the tech and like how it works. But they did a presentation on the Chrome operating system through the Google Docs service, which is actually what we've been using to do the show notes with. And it looks really good. If you've used the Chrome operating, the Chrome browser, it's basically, you know, like if you can imagine that your tabs for websites are also like tabs for applications, and it looked pretty cool to me. You know, I don't know what you guys, if you guys have seen it yet, but
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how good it is.
Go on to Gizmodo right now, then, while we're talking, and just
okay,
take an overview.
I was going to say that I love Google Chrome as an internet service.
Yeah, we talked about browsers back in like episode 5 or 6, I think. But I recently converted to Chrome. Firefox was just getting too slow for me. And that's, you know, it's partly to do with there's my pen. Partly to do with just, I guess I'd been using it for a while, but it's just when my browser doesn't want to speed up when I'm using like CCleaner and stuff on it, I gotta switch. So, but I really enjoyed Chrome, the operating system certainly looks cool. Mike, did you get a chance to look at it?
I looked at some screens from the operating system. I didn't read too much about it though.
I didn't read anything other than the live blog that Gizmodo did. But it's pretty cool. I mean, they're saying things like it's not going to have support for hard drives. It's only going to run off of solid state drives, which is kind of weird.
It's an odd one.
I think they just want people to move forward with technology.
A lot of what they said was looking ahead. You know, what they're saying is that this will be out before holiday 2010. They'll be announcing like hardware compatibilities in the middle of next year and stuff. So this is like the beginning of their, you know, people are going to have access to this. I think what they said is that Microsoft already developed the online office application for it. But the thing that was really cool with the office application is that they had an Excel file and wanted to open it, and rather than, you know, get the Windows pop-up, you know, what application do you want to use to find this, or find it on the web, it found the Microsoft application right away and opened up the Excel document. And I mean the Microsoft web application. Basically, I got the feeling watching the live blog and looking at all the stuff they rolled out that this is going to be a really cool, like, if you had a netbook or if you had a small laptop or something, it'd be awesome to run this, you know? It's like a highly advanced phone operating system almost, but I don't know how well it would be for your primary operating system.
I think Google Chrome OS is going to be really good in the far future, you know, maybe 2 to 3 years. It'll be great for like PCs when PCs are run off of not hard drives, but just like all flash memory and stuff like that.
Yeah, because this was using so much of, I mean, this just, it uses so much of the cloud to do its stuff. Like there was one part where they said that every bit of data you store on that system, the computer, is instantly synced with, I guess, your account in the cloud or whatever you set up when you get that computer. So there's no having to buy backup software, and there's no having to have two hard drives or you know, pay for a service online that will back up your hardware, and no remembering to do it because everything you do is automatically backed up online. So That was pretty cool. So it's, I mean, basically they said if your computer breaks, we have 100% of the data. You know, you're not in any trouble, which is cool. But cool. Certainly worth checking out. I'll try to get a link in the show notes to it on Gizmodo. Or I guess Google has a video up now that's like an overview of Chrome OS, kind of like what they did with Wave. But anyway, let me move on. The Droid camera, the Motorola Droid camera, originally it was bad. The color was all washed out. It was unfocused, and apparently there was some software in the device that is set to like change the focusing different based off of times, and it's really funky and it's not good software. But so a number of people thought they had fixed their phone because either Google released a stealth update to the phone or people had cleaned the lens. And the truth is that it's actually neither of these. The Droid fixed itself, which is funny enough. It was just every 24.5 days it like sets a new hardware cycle or something and changes the focusing on it. So right now the focusing is good and the camera works well and everything. But if you know, they're going to, of course, release an update, but if they didn't, 24.5 days from now, the camera would be unable to focus again.
That's kind of weird. That's
I
like,
agree. That's really
weird. Shouldn't they have noticed that in our testing?
What's that? Well, I think it's almost like the, you know, you remember when there were Zunes on the leap year, they all crashed. It's got to be something like that. There was just a little bit of code. And someone thought it'd be a good idea to have the focusing change for different times or whatever, and it was just off, and so it didn't work. You know, I don't think they ever anticipated it being launched and everyone saying the camera's horrible. But it seems now that it's all fixed. That's good news for anyone who has a Droid. Let me see. What else do we have here in the beginning section? Mike, do you want to tell everyone about the uTorrent 2.0 and what they're talking about eliminating the need for ISP throttling?
Oh, yeah. Dig 2000 in my Twitter update today told me about the uTorrent 2.0, and the big thing about that is they've updated it, and ISP providers always complain about how they have to throttle bandwidth for people who torrent, because the torrenting uses up so much bandwidth. Well, they explain it. I don't know exactly how they explain it, but uTorrent decided to coincide with the ISP providers and made their software so that it basically throttles itself rather than having to throttle the bandwidth. I don't know exactly how it works.
Yeah, I read this a few weeks ago, and it doesn't throttle downloads, but it throttles uploads, and
it's something to do with like uploading not taking more like uploading takes less bandwidth.
Well, uploading like takes more, I think.
I don't know. I just
read
it.
Well, no, actually, it does take more because whenever I don't know if you well because I have to upload the show every week, and it's like I can't do anything while I'm doing that. Like I could never jump on Call of Duty and play an online match while I'm updating the show, uploading the show, because it takes so much bandwidth.
I don't know, but they did something to fix it. And so apparently uTorrent 2.0, which I'm using the beta now, is much faster, and it doesn't slow the torrents down, so downloads are actually faster, and then ISP providers don't have to throttle the bandwidth. And then on top of that, one thing which I completely despise about uTorrent is like whenever you're torrenting something and you have like if you have medium bandwidth set, you know, bandwidth allocation for the torrent, then you can, you know, kind of browse the web just a little bit and you can't open too many, you know, videos streaming on the internet. But I was downloading something today through uTorrent 2.0 beta, and I had it on full bandwidth allocation. And I was able to, like, watch videos and surf the web and the normal speed. It didn't slow down at all, which is one of the main reasons why I didn't like the old uTorrent, because it just slowed the internet down. I couldn't do anything on the internet if I wanted to get my whatever I was downloading fast.
Yeah, uTorrent. That was when I made the switch from BitTorrent to uTorrent, that was, like, the big thing I noticed is BitTorrent, I could still do things online. uTorrent brings everything you try to do online to a screeching halt. because it takes all the bandwidth and downloads something. I'm looking at these new No More Heroes Paradise screens, and No More Heroes Paradise is coming out on the 360 and PS3 sometime next year. But these look good, Mike. I'm not sure.
Like, I know,
they've got the art style of the original one, but it's in HD. I mean, I don't know. It looks.
I know. I just read something on Kotaku that said it was. I know we're jumping to topics here. Said it didn't look as. I don't know. It just said it looked like a little flashier than the Wii version.
You open this up. Old one. Well, it says first No More Heroes Paradise touch screen score touchdown. Higher resolution with the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 port of the original, now known as... Oh, like the Wii version, just a little prettier, better textures, improved lighting, more pixels, less clothing.
I mean, it looks a little better than the Wii version.
Well, it looks like it's... I like the styling of the Wii version. It's just... It's because it's on the Wii, and it has that styling. It just
at least the frame rates are faster.
Like this one, you know, when you're driving down the streets, the trees aren't going to be popping in, you know, 50 feet in front of you.
It kind of looks like I like it though because I like that kind of graphics because it looks like a Tekken graphics.
Well, that or it reminds me with this higher resolution, higher definition, it looks like the Borderlands game.
Yeah, yeah.
And that looks really cool.
It looks like it looks like an upscaled version of like a of Street Fighter or like a, you know, a game like that, an arcade game, and I think that's what they wanted to get at. I mean, of course they could have made it like way better graphics and whatnot, but
yeah, I don't know, it looks good to me. Anyway, let me see what else we had to cover real quick. I guess the last thing the last thing I had in like the news section is that today Forecast Podcast episode 7 came out, and Forecast Podcast I want to really recommend. It's hosted by Scott Johnson and Tom Merritt. Scott Johnson does the Extra Life comics, and he's Extra Life on Twitter. And then Tom Merritt is a senior editor at CNET.com. And the show is all about the future. And they get two guests. Forecast is spelled F-O-U-R-Cast, like the number 4. And basically they get the two guests to predict the future. And so far they've had musicians, and they've had Leo Laporte and Veronica Belmont and other people like that that are kind of famous within the tech community. And it's a good show. It's a lot of fun. They talk about, you know, like near future and far future and ridiculous future and stuff. But I would recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think I still haven't listened to it yet, but I need to catch up on it.
Yeah, it's good. It was just, I just noticed episode 7 was released today, and it was a lot of fun. So let me move on then. I don't really have an app of the week.
You can talk about that graphics card I posted.
I'll let you do that.
Okay,
I did not read that article.
Yeah, it's on Gizmodo somewhere. Hold on. Actually, I posted a link to it.
It's in the Google Doc. I'm opening it right now.
Yeah, I just posted it. Okay.
The graphics card looks awesome.
Yeah, the graphics card looks great. The only thing that I've heard that's bad about it is it's almost a foot long. it's a ATI Radeon HD 5970 graphics card. And it is the world's fastest graphics card, and it just looks really cool. I mean, it's coming out soon, and it's all run on flash memory, so it is insanely fast. It's $600 though, but they said compared to every other like graphics card on the market that's like it, it's just, you know, the price is way the price it's going to be starting at is like way better.
Yeah.
Another cool thing is that I don't think it's on Kotaku, but they said it could run like 3 24-inch monitors at like 7,000 by something resolution without, you know, messing up.
See, that's why you'd have to buy one of these, because back in like 2004, 2005, if I'd seen this, I'd be like, oh, that's amazing. But
yeah.
I'm using my laptop from 2007 with my graphics card from 2007, you know.
Oh yeah, but if you
play Modern Warfare 2 on high, and I'm just like, all right, well, I mean, you know.
If you're a total like media or tech guru,
I guess yeah. If I had three
ultimate like, you know, media compy, I just like it. I'm just in awe because like, you know, in the near future when this becomes, you know, like the standard. I just can't wait to, it just kind of blows my mind. I can't wait to, like, actually have one of these, like, in a media compy.
But, I mean, the thing I'm thinking about is, like, I compare my card, which is a, NVIDIA GeForce 9800 MGT 1 gig, which is much better than Paul's card.
Mike and I have the same card.
Yeah, I know, and Mike's card.
I mean,
well, just compare the difference between those and then make it, you know, 100-fold or 200-fold better to this other card, and it's like...
Well, I mean, like it says, if you're using three screens or whatever, and I can see, I mean, mine, you know, I can power two screens just fine, but when I'm trying to do, you know, when I'm trying to play, like, a game on my primary screen and then watch,
Well, the thing is, it's just an example telling you that, like, if you have one screen, it's not going to crap out on you if you're running, you know, like... Crisis on like the highest ass settings that you can. I mean,
it runs quite nicely like that, Mike.
Yeah. Well, not really. I mean, for Call of Duty, I kind of have to turn down like the frame rates and stuff like that, like when I'm playing online. But that's mostly due to bandwidth. But if I tried to play Call of Duty like campaign with full on settings, I mean, my graphics card wouldn't run it.
Yeah, I set mine to everything on extra, and I mean it was pretty choppy.
Yeah, it's pretty choppy. Depending
but
on
compared to some games, I mean Call of Duty. I mean it's not like the, you know, it's really pretty. It's nice looking, but it's not the, you know, highest graphic standard ever. Certainly, I mean Crysis, which came out right after I got my laptop. If I set that to everything maxed, it's literally. Just like me watching the screen as it slowly loads things, and the screen's just like frozen, you know.
Yeah, there's no way I could possibly load that.
No, I mean John's computer, we were able to play it on high, and it looks really good. But
well, John's screen goes up to a higher resolution than our.
No, it doesn't. It's the same resolution.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 1440x900.
I wonder why his looks. I just remember his looks so much better, like on WoW.
Well, it was just There's a couple reasons. I think his, and I changed this on mine, you might want to do it on yours, the digital vibrance on the monitor. Mm-hmm. I just changed it because, like, when I played Call of Duty with my computer on your TV, it's really bright, you know? And then I went back to playing on my laptop, and it just looks kind of washed out. And so I set the digital vibrance up, and it made everything look brighter.
Yeah, you'll have to show me that when I come over later.
It's in the, I think it's in the NVIDIA settings, but...
Yeah, it sounds like it would be.
Anyway, let's move on then.
Modern Warfare?
Yeah, about 20 minutes, we'll do Modern Warfare. We're going to talk about the first half of the single-player campaign today, and it's going to be fun. So, let me open up whatever it's called. I found this on it was Call of Duty Wiki. I'll get you guys a link when I find it. So, Modern Warfare 2. By the way, I think I told you this last show, biggest selling entertainment launch of all time. They sold over 7 million copies the first week, over $500 million.
That's ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Who's cracking open a drink?
That would be
Juan. Let's do Mike.
Alrighty.
It is a Sprite.
Ah, here we go. Plot. Oh, gosh, I'm not going to give you the link, Mike. Or
why
John,
is that?
Because it'll ruin the story for you.
Oh.
I've seen the end of it.
John,
I'm sure John has already read this story.
Alright, so...
No, I played it through with Will. I played the last half of the campaign with him.
Alright, well, I'm just going to narrate the first half.
Sitting there watching, so...
Yeah. Modern Warfare, now, to give you a little bit of a catch-up, Modern Warfare 4, let me open up the thing for that. So basically, Modern Warfare, it's the previous ones, Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3, were all set in World War II, and all the battles in those were based off of actual battles in the war. And basically what you would have is, you just fight through historic things, and nothing that did not happen occurred. And then Call of Duty 4 comes along and has its own, 24-esque plot, and was awesome. So the plot of the first one was that this Russian ultranationalist named Imran Zakayev is determined to return his homeland to the Soviet times. Zakayev knows the U.S. will never allow this to happen, so he funds a coup in the Middle East, which is where the game opens, organized by his ally Khaled al-Assad to draw his attention away from Russia. The U.S. gets involved over in the Middle East, and it's an unknown Middle Eastern country, basically. The U.S. goes nuts over there. And in the meantime, you are working with the SAS, who have figured out, what's going on in this whole thing, and they figure out that what's going on. Basically, they figure out that this was funded. You're looking for al-Assad first, and anyway, you find out that Zakayev has supplied him, so on and so forth. The game ends. The first game ends after various events happen, with you, most of the people on your team are killed. And Mike, have you done the castle level yet in Modern Warfare 2?
Castle.
It's called the Gulag.
No, I have not.
And that is a fun mission, but I won't tell you anything else. Then most of your team is killed, and you personally kill Zakayev. Anyway, 5 years pass, and we get to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And so, like I said, Zakayev wanted to return it to the Soviet times. He was turned into... They spun his story into making him a martyr for Russia. And basically these ultra-nationalists gained a significant control of, not control of Russia, but it says the ultra-nationalists seized control of Russia. So Russia changes hands as far as control goes. This is turning into some of a meltdown. So Russia is taken over by the ultra-nationalists, and Imran Zakayev is turned into a huge martyr. One of his former lieutenants, Vladimir Makarov, begins a reign of terror against Europe, staging terror attacks all over the continent. Basically, the game opens, and you're playing a Private Allen of the U.S. Army Rangers, and Allen gets picked up to go undercover as one of Makarov's associates. And what we come to next is the most controversial thing about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. What you have to do as an undercover agent is participate in one of Makarov's terrorist attacks, and you basically walk through a Russian airport in a level called No Russian, which is taken from the fact that Makarov supposedly, he tells you not to kill any Russians, but it's very clear that he does. And basically, these guys massacre every person in sight in this airport. And you can shoot your gun if you choose to. You don't have to. And I actually didn't. I didn't shoot mine until
I did. It was fun.
Okay,
guys. Civilians.
Later on in the mission, you have to fight against the Russian, a SWAT team that's come to try and suppress the attack. But I didn't, and it was a I think it was kind of a bold move from them. It comes across much more as a set piece, and it's the most important part of the story as far as it being the catalyst for everything else that happens in the game. But it seemed bold of Infinity Ward to put this in the game, because if you think about, you know, the closest thing you've ever got to this is like Grand Theft Auto, where you can walk up to someone and, you know, kill them on the street and take their money. But that always comes across as cartoonish. This was not.
Cartoonish?
I mean, you know, compared to Modern Warfare 2.
Well, I guess because there's just random acts of violence in, like, normal cities, but I see what you're saying.
Because Grand Theft Auto never seemed like it. I mean, maybe the latest one seems more realistic, but other ones didn't seem at all to be. You know what I mean? They didn't ever seem. I mean, this when you're walking through here, there are people, you know, dragging other people to safety, and people sitting and moaning on the ground, and people running and screaming. It never happened like that in Grand Theft Auto. This was pretty sobering. I mean, it was a, you know, it's meant to do a couple things. It's meant to make you realize how bad this guy Vladimir Makarov is.
Killing his own people to begin with.
Yeah, it's meant to really make you want to get back at this guy, and it's the major plot catalyst for the whole game. And so what happens after this is that basically you get ready to climb into the back of an ambulance, and you guys are escaping from this airport after you've shot up hundreds of civilians and a small, 50 or so SWAT team guys from Russia. Right as you're getting ready to climb into this ambulance, he shoots you, and his intended point is that he knew you were an American, and so he wants to make this whole attack look like it was done by an American. And that, to me, was interesting, to say the least, because it reminds me a little too much of us, because, you know, I mean, after 9/11, we went ahead and invaded countries that were not, you know, I mean, they were related, but they weren't exactly. Anyway, so the point is that the Russians, of course, get all up in arms, and the Russians do what we would do and attack the United States. And this comes in a multi-coastal paradrop invasion. Basically, the movie Red Dawn. But
it happens.
No Patrick
knows.
So the Russians come into the United States, and they destroy Washington D.C. You fight in that city. You fight in the suburbs. And that was interesting. There's never been. You know, I played the game. Freedom Fighters a while ago. You remember that one, John?
Yeah.
That never felt like you were in the United States. It felt like you were just in cities and stuff. This, when you're walking down the streets, I mean, there's a part where you're fighting, like, in an apartment complex.
Yeah, it did. It kind of hits home.
You're like, man,
you realize that,
we're on,
you know, we never had a war in our own country.
Yeah.
It's always somewhere else.
Especially, like, you know, in Fallout 3... You know, we get to see a destroyed Washington, D.C. and everything. But Fallout 3, it wasn't going on then. Fallout was, you know, it was way after the fact. And so the city's just, you know, it's all ash and everything, but nothing's going on. This was, I mean, you know, the Washington Monument's burning, and at one point you, I don't want to give it away because you haven't done it just yet, but I mean, you're fighting all around the city, and you're seeing all these landmarks, and, you know, I mean, there's one part where you're in a helicopter gunning down guys who have stationed at the World War II, memorial. Basically, that memorial gets destroyed, too, but it's just, I can't recall a time in the game where it's put things in so much perspective, you know? I mean, you've been there. You've been everywhere that you go in Washington, D.C. So
yeah.
It was very interesting, to say the least.
I mean, even when you're fighting, like I just played the level, you're fighting in a town, and you're fighting in, like, what they call Burger Town, which is really Burger King, and you're fighting in, like, a taco place, which is really supposed to be Taco Bell, but they can't do the names because of, you know, copyright infringement. But
you're basically,
still, if it's close to home, you're just like, what if this actually happened in my town?
They created like a blueprint perfect, like Burger King and a Taco Bell and a Nate's Bar and Grill, you know, and a gas station and stuff. And you end up, you see these places not as what they are called, but you see it as like a Ruby Tuesday and a Burger King and a Taco Bell.
Whatever you live next to.
Basically, you know, I mean, the burger place and the Taco Bell look exactly like what they're supposed to look like, you know. And it there's just, when you're playing it, you know, you can play all the Middle Eastern levels you want and it doesn't hit home, but then you realize that you're defending Burger King from the Russians, you know. I don't know. It's part of the game that made you think, and it's part of it that made it so awesome.
No one's ever done it, you know, that realistic before.
No, not at all.
Where it feels like you're actually fighting in, you know, America.
Anyway, there's other missions, too, at the same time. Mike, just, you're trying to get this guy. All you have to figure out who is behind the attack or where Makarov is the you have a bullet from this airport attack, and so you trace the bullet to an arms dealer in Brazil, and basically you're chasing this guy through the favela in Rio de Janeiro, and it's awesome, but that's with the SAS and. You need to, basically, you discover that to get to, after you capture and interrogate this guy, Alejandro Rojas, who is the arms dealer, you discover that to get Makarov to come out of hiding, you have to pull out one of his most hated enemies, known as Prisoner 627, who's held in a Russian prison. And Mike, you're up to there, I guess, because you have to, in order to get, he's on the east coast of Russia. And so, you know, that's one of the connections in the game that's kind of difficult at first to make, because Vladimir Makarov is a terrorist. He's not he's not part of the ultranationalists, you know, so he can't get this guy out of prison in Russia. So in order to get to this Prisoner 627, you have to actually take out a bunch of surface-to-air missile sites, which are built onto oil rigs, and the Russians are basically using civilians as a shield, because the United States won't bomb them if there's civilians on them. So you get to do one of the coolest missions of the game to me, which was assault an oil rig, and you actually launch out from a submarine.
That's
and go there. But basically, there's so much intrigue in this game, and more plot points than I've seen in a long time. And basically, it's a fast-paced game, and the story is exciting when it unfolds. Anyway, next week we'll come back and we'll talk about the rest of the story. To finish up everything else.
Hopefully by then I'll have had the game and played it through already.
Yeah.
So I can put some, you know, actual input about it.
Basically, though, so far, I mean, it's I put a review up, a two-minute review quote on my website, it's impeccably produced. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's difficult, even at the regular difficulty. There are parts in the Brazil mission, the Rio de Janeiro mission, where you just it feels like you can't beat it.
That's good about it, though, too.
It's good. There were some parts that felt a little bit harder than they should have been. And towards the end of the game, it gets very difficult. I know you saw Will play it. It's easier on the 360, I think, because that has auto-aim when you zoom down the barrel.
Yeah.
PC does not at all.
Yeah, no.
So you pretty much have to be dead on. Anyway, so I guess we'll finish up the show with that. Next week we'll get back to this.
I'll finish the campaign so we can talk about the rest.
Yeah, there's a lot to it, and the multiplayer is fantastic as well. I think next time, if you have finished it and then John has as well, we can all talk about, you know, different things. I know Kotaku's having a book club thing right now where they're going through the missions and basically discussing them like they were chapters in a book, and that's really, really cool. And maybe we'll do that after John beats it. We could actually, you know, devote a whole show to looking through it.
That would be nice.
Anyway, multiplayer is pretty fun too.
I already mentioned that.
I know. I'm using the AUG right now. It's so much fun. I've got the hand grip on it, and I got the red dot sight.
Nice.
And it's nice because it fires as fast as a submachine gun, and it reloads as fast as an assault rifle, but it's got more ammo. So
it's an AUG, and it's awesome.
I know. It feels
it's kind of like the
P90,
but more accurate.
I know, gosh.
The P90 is not accurate.
People love
at
that
all.
So much, but I just I have dual P90s now, and I do the exact same layout as I do with my dual.
You have duals. You don't even have to aim.
Well, but you think that because I did the same layout I do with my dual UMP45s, and with my dual UMP45s, I'm unstoppable in missions like Rust and Terminal. The P90s is like not at all. they spray all over the place.
Well, you're just spraying. I mean,
well,
what's wrong with that?
Because if you fire too long, someone's going to turn around and kill you first. I just took G4's advice and changed my killstreak rewards because I had it at 3 for care package, 4, or not 3 for care package, 3 for UAV, 4 for care package, and 8 for emergency airdrop. And they said the quickest way to get up that high is to be able to take out 4 or 5 enemies and get your Predator missile. Use the Predator missile to hopefully take out 2 enemies. Get the Harrier strike and hopefully take out a couple enemies with the bomb and then a couple more.
No, but that doesn't add to your kill streak.
No, that does if you get it from a care package drop that someone else drops, then it doesn't go to your kill streak. But if you actually get it, it does.
Oh, okay.
So that's the easiest way to get up because they showed basically G4 shows you how to get to like 11 kill streaks, and then they got the chopper gunner and went nuts. And that was crazy.
I always get killed every time I use the Predator missile, you know. You respawn. Oh,
yeah, I know.
Someone knifes you while you're doing it.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of kill in the game because it's so easy. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that guy's not here at all. I just pulled off my Windows Vista and Centrino inside stickers off my computer finally.
Oh, speaking of which, guys, today I had Windows 7 blue screen on me and crashed.
I saw you tweet that. What happened?
Yeah. I was listening to Pandora, and I was trying to watch a video of that, you know, truck with the fire or rocket on the back of it on Gizmodo. I don't know if you've seen that.
I saw the link, but I didn't click on it.
Yeah, all of a sudden my music just went like, and then like the screen went blank, and then it pulled up the blue screen, and it said dumping memory, and it crashed.
I have had that happen to me before, the memory dump.
Yeah, well, it pulled up the blue screen, did the memory dump, and I knew it would be fine, you know.
Yeah.
But I've just never seen it, like, crash for me doing absolutely nothing. It wasn't like I was loading a game. And another thing, Call of Duty keeps crashing on me. Like, it freezes on me all the time.
Huh.
And I have no
clue. I haven't had it freeze. I had it for a little while. I had it where it was, like, a Steam issue or something, but it would crash every time I tried to get into a game. And that was Steam entirely. I had to, like, restart the computer and do other things and get Steam working. But it was not due to the game. Oh, gosh.
I just thought that was weird that Windows 7 would blue screen on me because, you know.
Well, I mean, it's still going to blue screen on you. I had a few blue screens when I was doing the release candidate. I don't think I've had any ever since I installed the regular one. I may have had one, but it's, you know, it's funny. People always say
it recovered. It wasn't like I lost everything. It just, you know, restarted itself.
Yeah, beginning memory.
Some people make a big deal about it. They're like, oh, a blue screen, there's something wrong with it. And I'm like, it just happens once in a while. As long as it fixes itself,
I'm fine. Honestly, it's blue because, you know, I don't know, I guess Microsoft has a trademark on blue colors, blue colored emergencies or something. But, you know, it's not that big a deal. I mean, People, it's the same with the Red Ring of Death. I know there's several different Red Rings, you know, and you might get the, I mean, you'll probably get the actual one, but it's just...
You know they're actually unbanning some Xboxes now?
Really?
Well, the Xboxes have gotten banned from Xbox Live for and people who are hacking their Xbox and cheating. They banned the Xbox Live, the Xbox from Xbox Live, and people bought them on eBay and then couldn't get on Xbox Live because the Xbox is banned. Well, now they're actually unbanning some of them.
Well, that's good, because I heard that on, I think it was This Week in Tech or something, but they're talking about how all these have been banned, and so all these banned Xboxes are showing up, and there's like a wave of them coming that came to eBay, you know, because people, well, I can't play my games. All these were hacked to play pirated games, and the reason they're all banned pretty much is that the pirated game of choice was someone had pirated the 360 version of Modern Warfare 2 about a week or so before launch. And so all these people just went nuts to get, you know, they modded their Xbox or whatever to be able to play pirated Modern Warfare 2. And obviously did not pay off for them, you know.
John, are you sanding something? What is that?
Oh, that's me. Sorry, I didn't know how loud that was. I'm trying to get rid of, I'm almost done getting the residue off where I cut this sticker off of my computer.
Oh, you know what I found out? From playing Modern Warfare, like, I've seen that little mark from your palm of your hand when you're doing WSD on your computer.
Yeah.
Well, it started to happen to my computer, and I had to, like, clean that off.
I know, that's...
residue from your hand.
That came from Modern Warfare 1.
Okay, we're getting way off topic.
It wasn't close. I know. Well, we're still, you know, talking. Anyway, it's been a good show. Thanks for participating. Mike, I'll be over in a few minutes to watch The Orifice.
Yep.
So,
I'll be watching The Office too. Will kind of be in the same.
Oh, I totally missed Flash Forward.
Yeah, we did.
Thanks for sacrificing, Jan. Thanks.
I'm not even following Flash Forward anymore. I got so behind on that.
We'll catch up tomorrow.
I do like to follow Always Sunny, and I hear this Always Sunny this week is going to be hilarious.
All right. Well, I'll see you guys a little later. See you tomorrow, John.
Hey, see you guys later. Have a good one.